Good morning, everybody. This is Brandon again with the Iowa Healthcare Association, getting ready to start our call with Amerigroup. Do we have any Amerigroup contacts on the line with us today? I will pause for a moment and see if we have anyone from Amerigroup that has joined us. Any contacts from Amerigroup on the line? Give them a couple minutes here. In the meantime, I will start my piece again in case we've had some individuals who are joining us for the first time this morning by covering some informational letters. The first informational letter I wanted to cover here is informational letter 2134 on electronic visit verification. This is talking about the EVV system solution that is being chosen by the Department of Human Services, CareBridge. They're using a MCO model rather than a fee-for-service model. CareBridge is that selection that they're going to be going through. If you want to see the services, that's applicable to the launch that will be happening 1-1 of 21. The group or the providers that will be used for this first launch will be the attendant care providers, as well as some other ones. But I think as far as our members go, I think attendant care is the main service, and more information is included in informational letter 2117. Also, if you have questions, you can send that to evv@dhs.state.ia.us if you have any questions on EVV. The next informational letter we wanted to cover quick is the one on HCBS retainer payments. This is due to the public health emergency and is in place for providers to bill for services that they were unable to render during the month of April 2020. Most of our providers would fall under the consumer-directed attendant care through the elderly waiver that they could submit for. This is only for the month of April 2020. For services that were affected by COVID-19. That's informational under 2136. If you want to review that and get additional information on that, I would recommend you do so. Also gives information on billing of those services. So these have came out in May, so we're obviously a little behind this. We've run these in our bulletins, so hopefully you've already seen them before today. And the last informational letter that we have here is 2141. This is the creation of an eligibility group called COVID-19 testing. This is in place for people who are uninsured that did not have coverage before. This covers testing and diagnosis of COVID-19. It does not cover the services needed afterwards. It's just covering the test and the diagnosis of it. So I just wanted to point that out. That's informational letter 2141, and it's a coverage source for those who are uninsured during this COVID-19 time. And there's different characteristics within there on how to know if you qualify. So I'm going to check again to see if we have any individuals from Amerigroup on the call with us this morning.
Hi, Danielle's here.
Hey, Danielle.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you? Thanks for joining us.
Good.
Good morning, Brandon.
Hey, John. I think now would be a time if Amerigroup has any opening comments that you guys would like to make, now would be a time to do that if you have any.
I wanted to double check to see if Julie Stewart is on the call yet.
I am, John. I just didn't get a chance to hone in, but yes, I am on the call.
Yeah. If your computer is like mine, Zoom technology decided it needed to do an update as I was dialing into this, and I delayed a little bit. So I do want to do a few updates here, just in noting, we're managing. Mayor Group is administering the new changes or temporary alterations in the Medicaid program. Just sort of give a snapshot. The expanded home delivered meal program continues to receive upwards of 300 to 400 additional requests per day from individuals who are outside of the normal home delivered meal covered benefit category and the ID waiver and the elderly waiver. So we're seeing intense interest there and fulfilling that with our contractors. We're also tracking to our daily protocol and case managers doing outreach to nursing facilities and residents or families of Amerigroup members in nursing facilities where there are known outbreaks. We had been tracking to 40 facilities across the state. I think that some of those facilities are coming off the list according to the governor's press conference earlier this morning, wherein some of those facilities have had no new confirmed cases in 28 days and no additional hospitalization. So I would expect that there'll be some sort of an announcement or a revision on the Iowa Department of Public Health's website with regard to their daily counts on that dashboard for tracking all of the COVID-related cases, the settings, and other demographics. We do continue to meet regularly as a group with Iowa Medicaid Enterprise and all of their departments, as well as Iowa Total Care and the two managed care dental programs to review any new changes in the program, to monitor some of the implementation protocols that are coming out of federal announcements where there is additional CARES Act funding flowing to states for specific provider organizations. And the most recent of which was an announcement that came out on yesterday, I believe, that some additional CARES Act funding and a separate source of funding is being managed through the Centers for Medicare Services that would go to those Medicaid providers that haven't already received some sort of federal relief. And it falls mostly in the home and community-based service settings, environments, and they tend to be mostly Medicaid-dependent provider organizations. So you'll see, I think you'll probably see some more information letters and, state information coming out about how implementation of federal dollars for COVID relief will occur. We'll note also that, the legislature is going through its appropriations process and expects that they'll put their stamp on both funding and policy guidance in the response and mitigation efforts moving forward. So finally, I will note that the governor announced today that among the other service provider networks that are being opened up, are allowed to open up following forthcoming guidance we expect this afternoon, that will include adult day centers opening and a phased approach. Guidance will talk about what they will need to do to be compliant and show compliance with the CDC protocols and the state protocols on social distancing, et cetera. So there is still a lot going on there. The Iowa Medicaid Enterprise does have a weekly stakeholders call-in wherein representatives of organizations like Iowa Healthcare Association, Iowa Association of Community Providers, Iowa Behavioral Health Association, Iowa Hospital Association, and others are able to hear some opening update remarks from Director Randall about the Medicaid program, adjustments that are taking place as it relates to the coronavirus pandemic response. And then he opens it up to questions from providers. And there are, you know, some, you know, fairly typical things that are coming through. Most recently, tracking to, you know, what the state will be doing to administer any CARES Act funding that is flowing to provider groups, and timing and implementation processes, some of which involves the use of both of the managed care organizations, and some of which does not involve uses of managed care organizations. So I think that's probably it. You know, obviously that's, you know, just sort of a thumbnail sketch of the response efforts, you know, day to day. Our community-based case managers, as well as our integrated case managers, maintaining contact with members according to the members' needs and benefit programs and the rules and regulations around those benefit programs. But the face-to-face visits are still suspended, and we're using, you know, Zoom technology and telephonic technology, just like, you know, everybody else is. So, you know, I think that your communications with Provider Solutions is operating similarly. I'm going to pause there and do a quick round robin. I will note Donna Wendt is not available for today's call. So if there are any LTSS utilization management questions, we'll just need to have you submit them in writing and send them in so that we can have her respond, unless we're able to, you know, between Daniel and Julie and I respond here on the call with you. I'm going to quickly throw it out. Julie, do you happen to have anything you wanted to do an update on? Not required, just giving you a chance to do an update here.
Nope, nothing specific. You covered a lot, John, so I think we're good. Thank you.
Good. Danielle, did you have anything you wanted to do an update on?
No, nothing. You excellent job. Thank you.
Great. Well, I am going to do my best to minimize this screen so I can get ready for the question and answer section.
Okay. Well, thanks for your opening comments, John, and Amerigroup's willingness to continue to participate in these monthly calls with our members. They're very helpful. We did have a couple of questions submitted ahead of time of some issues providers are experiencing. So I just wanted to go through those quick and see if there's any comments from you guys on that. The first one is in regards to for our home health members and the Z76.89 code being used as any secondary diagnosis and providers seeing some denials from that. So what we're looking for, trying to figure out, is do we have a timeline on when this will be fixed, and then our claims going to be automatically reprocessed when they are incorrectly denied for needing an EOB?
So I don't have a timeline to share with you, but what I can tell you is that, yes, claims are going to be, they are being automatically reprocessed when denying for the Z code, not being in the second position. And this will incur until the programming change takes place. So providers don't really need to do anything. Our programming and development team have identified the changes that need to take place in the configuration. And what I'll tell you is when I know what the clear timeline is for that correction from our IT, I will share it with you immediately.
And then are you actually, you guys are actually seeing people have claims automatically reprocessed then or being swept then?
Yeah, Melissa says that they are being automatically reprocessed. She can track to that.
Okay, okay. So if you are a provider, if there is a provider who has maybe received some of these denials that has not had their claims automatically swept at all, what would a recommendation for them be?
Reach out to your representative.
And then since these are all home health, does that go to you then, Danielle?
Yeah. Yes, that's me.
Okay. I appreciate obviously letting us know as soon as you know of a timeline for when that will be fixed. Again, we're looking for this to hopefully the fix to be in place so it can go as any secondary diagnosis because of the implications that has on risk adjustment for home health providers being in the second slot or any second through sixth slot, actually. Just to make sure that, you know, we're all on the same page. So I appreciate letting us know as soon as you guys do on that. So thank you.
Hey, Brandon, it's Julie. Just a quick follow-up to that. So are you guys doing weekly sweeps to catch these claims as they come in?
I don't know the time frame of the sweeps. Do you know, Julie?
I don't.
I don't think we've been provided with that information, but we can take that back and ask. Initially, we were going to do weekly sweeps, but I don't know that it would be wise for us to say that on this call based on the information that Melissa provided on Monday. We will take back.
Yeah, we have access or we can get access, but we don't have it today. That's fair.
Yeah. It's regular. It is regular sweeps. I just don't know if it's every 7 days.
Thanks, John. The next question that we have submitted is on NF rebase. And I will say that it looks like several claims have been reprocessed. We were hovering right around, I want to say around 70%, at least in the sample that I have done. The coordination of benefit, there was an issue with those claims, which I think was caught last week, and those claims have reprocessed as well, getting us really close to the finish line, I feel. There's always going to be some claims that probably will not reprocess automatically just because of a number of different reasons. So I appreciate the catching that and making those and reprocessing those claims. So one of the questions we have here are we going to automatically be reprocessing the claims that paid incorrectly when the rate changes were processed? There were some that had several claims that maybe had hospital days or SNF skilled days on them or the CP was put in. Will those be automatically gone through again for accuracy, or what should the provider do with those?
Yeah, any claims that are overpaid by not appropriately deducting the client participation amounts will be included in the overpayment recovery projects. As those occur, providers will receive appropriate notices. So just, you know, wait until you hear from us.
Okay. And then there are instances where to get the claim paid initially, they may have had to go through a claims dispute process. I'd heard from a couple providers that had said that if the claim had gone through that kind of a process to get paid the first time, that it would not be caught in an automatic reprocessing of the claim or a rate change. Is that Is that accurate? Is it an accurate understanding of how it works?
Will you repeat the question, Brandon? I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's all right. Yeah,
I got it.
Thank you.
This is going to be a long answer. So if it's helpful, I'll run this by Melissa and make sure make sure I've got the verbiage correct, and get this into writing over to you. So if a claim is otherwise paid through a provider-initiated reconsideration, provider or appeal, that still required additional adjustment based on per diem rate adjustment, the claim would be eligible for a broader additional project sweep and would have been included in our reprocessing. So to clarify further, if there are conditions that would make a claim not eligible for reprocessing, including absence of corrected claim with increased billing charges. Amerigroup also would not reprocess claims that had valid denials or other billing errors that would have rendered that payment ineligible on the first time it was adjudicated. So, you know, things like wrong billing type or billing for a member who had termed off the Medicaid eligibility. So Melissa asked me to share an additional note on this one, and that is that there are some inquiries recently from providers who apparently are not aware that corrected claims need to be submitted if the previously billed amount was lower than the amount reimbursed after the rebase went into effect for 7/1/19. The reason is because our claims logic, which is based on federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services standards, will not pay above and beyond a bill charge. So you've got to resubmit that, and providers have, you know, a year, 365 days, from the date of the service to resubmit that for the corrected claim reprocessing. So, and Julie, if you wanted to jump in to add anything to that particular answer, I mean, this is going to be something that providers are going to have to take on a provider by provider and sometimes claims level inquiry. And it, you know, it is very difficult to make generalized statements on this call. Providers are going to have to contact, you know, provider relations reps if they need assistance with this.
I think you covered it, John. I'm not sure. It is complicated and long, but I mean, really the bottom line is what the claims reprocessing is going to pick up are clean, standard, you build enough for us to reprocess and pay that additional amount. If there's anything outside of that issue, you know, they probably won't. They shouldn't fall into, you know, some random OHI claims. That shouldn't occur, but there might be just other issues that come up. So there, I would expect some fallout, and if it happens, then you can appeal yourself or contact the rep just for clarification.
Thanks, Julie and John. And I'm just going to try to reiterate a piece of this, and you can tell me if I'm interpreting it right or wrong. But so if a claim did require like a dispute or an appeal, and that claim ended up getting paid because it was determined that and the initial claim was submitted accurately and, you know, all was good with the claim, that should be automatically reprocessed to an increased rate because it was founded as an accurate claim.
Yes. I believe if you are reiterating what I was saying, yes.
Yes. Right.
Yeah, 'cause I thought that what I'd heard was, you know, if it was founded that the claim was denied or there were some other reasons for a denial, that obviously those would not be reprocessed because there is a denial that's in place that is stuck in place and that is still a denied claim. But if we have been paid because we appealed it and then won the appeal and were paid for the services, then those services were deemed appropriate and should then be able to flow automatically. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. That's what I thought I got from your comments, John. So I just wanted to make sure that I was thinking through that accurately. And then to your second point of Lesterov logic, I want to restate this again because I continue to get questions on it, or people continue to have claims unpaid and they're not unsure why. And I think John said it right, where if you are not billing at an amount that is above what your new rate is on your initial claim submission, those claims will not be reprocessed. So many providers choose to submit a customary charge. And say, for example, you wanted to submit all your claims at $300 per day, knowing that $300 is not your rate. That is significantly above your rate. But what will happen is you will be paid at what you're contracted at, which is your quarterly fee for service rate for nursing homes or your LUPA rates for home health agencies. So if you submit a customary charge that is above that, when you have a rate increase, whether due to the LUPA rates being redone or a rebase where those rates go up, you're still covered as long as that doesn't go above your customary amount. So 300 in the example. If you go from 200 to 205, you're still okay because what you submitted initially exceeded both of those amounts. So I hope that makes sense. If you submit your exact rate every time and your rate went up, you will need to submit a corrected claim to capture that difference. So I just wanted to make sure that we were reiterated again. I did have a provider reach out to me again recently that had not been paid for many of their services. So they needed to submit corrected claims to get those processed. So we do have, that's it for our submitted ahead of time claims or questions. So I'm going to go to the chat here, and we have a few in there as well. And the first one that I have, it says, for Medicare Part B coinsurance claims, they're receiving denials stating contract obligation service not payable per managed care contract. Any feedback on Part B coinsurance claims?
Oh, sorry. I just unmuted and then I had to cough. Sorry.
Of course.
I apologize. Figure. So sometimes they are not recognized as Part B. What I would tell you is the denial doesn't always describe the problem. So I know providers get really worried when they'll get like, you know, this isn't in your contract denial or something like that. Especially with Part B claims, they're just probably weren't processed correctly, recognizing that it was a Part B claim. So what I would tell you is they should file an appeal and just explain, you know, this is a Part B claim. Medicare picked up the primary, I believe is what the issue is with those claims, and asked them to be reprocessed. And if that's unsuccessful, reach out to your rep.
Thanks, Julie. The next
So Brent, can you time out for a second? Can we just request that people submit their questions in chat so everyone can see them? Because it's sometimes easier to read or reread what is being asked rather than just hearing it repeated from you.
Yep, that's a fine request for me. I don't have any others, so that was the only one. The next one, as you can, everyone can see, they did reach out to their provider rep regarding the Z7689 denial for coordination of benefits. Stated to wait for the claim sweep to occur, but they've not seen one. What would be their next step, or who should they contact?
That wasn't said by me. Oh, I know that.
That's true.
I mean, they could submit the dispute themselves. I mean, that's the only other option. If they do not want to wait for the sweeps, and their representative, you know, instructed them to wait for the sweeps, if they, you know, think it's taking a long time, then they can submit their own disputes.
And it sounds like there could be some confusion on the rep if you didn't make that comment. For these claims, I would probably, they would need to go to you.
I tell providers there are sweeps that are going through. You know what I mean? You can wait for the sweeps if you do not hear your other options, you know. Okay. But that's what I tell to all the providers.
Okay. The next one. We have not seen any of our hospice, room and board, nursing facility rate increase corrected claims being reprocessed when they were denied for duplicate. The rep asked for a report of each individual claim that was denied. Should we continue to provide that report, which takes a lot of time, or should those be caught in the sweep as well?
I mean, I think for me, it's easier. I know it may be a little bit work for the provider, but I prefer if the provider sometimes can give me the claim information.
And
I don't know. Sometimes I can run a report, but sometimes the reports are not clean for that denial. So, you know, it's up to the provider.
Go ahead.
Sorry, Brandon. I was just going to say, I would reiterate that. Just sometimes it's like finding a needle in the haystack. And so it's just easier if we know we're talking about picking up the right stuff, the right claims. You know, if you know something didn't pay right, then you've already identified those claims, and that it just makes things go quicker, to be honest, if the provider can identify them.
Yes, absolutely.
I would also say, you know, if you're submitting documentation and individual claim IDs for services that need to be fixed, and you can, if you're sending that through email, you obviously have it documented that you've made outreach for each of those individual claims in the future. If they end up not being paid, you then have that information showing that it was submitted. If you're talking in generalized terms, it is going to be hard to prove that you have been working on this if it comes down to not getting paid for your service in the future. But the more specific you can be with the information, not only does it make it easier for the MCO to identify the exact problem with an exact claim, it also would cover you as having worked that specific claim with the MCO as well. Because we do, unfortunately, see turnover with people that we work with. We see turnover with provider reps. And if you have a relationship with them and you're working on them, working with them on something, and you're working in generalized terms, if they leave and someone else has to take over, you're starting over. But if you've already done the work and have the claims ID information out there, that can only help you when showing that it has been worked or it has been provided in the past, if that makes sense.
Yes. And I just want to add to all the providers. I mean, I understand sometimes it is a lot of work, and I understand that. But I just want to make sure everyone knows that, you know, I mean, I am the only representative for you guys, for Iowa. And so it means it's, when we have an issue like this, that means it's just about every contracted provider. And I do work on other states. So it just makes it easier. You know, I mean, I'm willing to put in the work, but it just makes it easier. You know what I mean? And quicker if that information is provided. That's all. It just, You know what I mean? I can get your project submitted a lot faster. And I know that's what you guys want.
Right. Yep. Thanks, Danielle. And Danielle is obviously for all of our home health members. So the next question is primary EOB denials being received still. This is for nursing facilities. What's the status of this and when will this be corrected? So nursing home claims asking for a primary EOB when obviously it's not a service covered by Medicare.
I think those are just like random denials.
That's
not a problem. Yeah.
Very random. Right. Yeah. Nursing homes don't usually get that.
Right. I agree. Super often, but I would say that there are still many claims that still do get that denial for some reason.
With any of those random, kind of one-offs, the easiest, quickest way is to appeal it yourself. And especially, that should be a fairly easy fix because those random ones that, it's not a system issue or whatever, that should be an easy appeal.
I don't know that on these, I would say that they're one-offs because I think they happen more often than that. I don't, that it may be some kind of a system issue. I don't know. I don't see the claim detail, but I hear about it still enough that it makes me think that it's not like a one-off deal. And then there are instances.
For nursing?
Yeah.
Nursing
where we do appeal and it's upheld that it should be denied for that reason. So it's not always the easiest route, I suppose, to go that appeals route if you know that it should have been paid the first time anyways. And of course, this is me. I don't have a claim in front of me to show that that's what happened. But if there is somebody, Jules, if you have claims that you've submitted, I can't imagine this is a one-off deal. But if you have any examples, I think that would be appreciated. Claim IDs would be preferred so that way there's no PHI and we can make sure that they're being looked at by AmeriGroup. A question of, do you have a map showing who the provider rep is for my region? I will say that those are on AmeriGroup's website.
Those links are now in chat.
Perfect. I haven't got there yet, but I appreciate those being in there. I was under the impression that Medicaid no longer paid the Part B coinsurance portion. Has that changed? The answer was just given to me makes me think that Medicaid does allow the coinsurance. I was on the same thought train of Part B co not being paid, but I suppose we can take another look at that unless someone from the MCOs, if you guys have any other comments on that.
No, I don't know. I mean, it'd be great to see some examples at the claims level to find out what's going on. It may well be that this is somebody who is dual eligible and covered by a Quimby Cylumbi program that's not, necessarily enrolled in AmeriGroup only and might be, a part of one of the other MCO MA products. I don't know.
I think it's another question on provider reps. And I think John included that as well. I know that their map also has usually a supervisor information as well. In the top left corner is where it used to be anyways, if you're not having success reaching out to your current rep. Is that still there, John?
Is what still there?
The supervisor info in the corner.
So, there are a lot of maps. If you go if you scroll down to the main list of links that include all the training resources, all of the, so there's manager stuff up in the left-hand corner on the particular map that you have stored there. And it's the same for all of the other lines of provider solutions reps, so the medical and others. In addition to that, if you have some clinical conversations that need to be had, the LTSS regional manager list is on the same website. You just go down to LTSS and you can find that there.
Perfect. If the provider is being asked to submit a spreadsheet of claims that should be corrected via project, would it be possible to receive a report from Amerigroup and then the provider identify what claims from their spreadsheet they need reprocessed? It'd be helpful and save the provider time of having to look up everything from scratch to put on the dispute spreadsheet.
Okay, so Christine, I know her. So what you can do, if it's easier, if they're all the same denials, you know what I mean, and this goes down to, I think, the question I see from Marilyn. So if it's all the same denials, what you can do is send me an email and say, hey, Danielle, I got my month of April claims are denying for that QAO. I would need that information and your tax ID number, and I can have a report run. So, yes, so just let me know if it's all one denial like that, what the denial is, what the time frame is, and I can have a report run and then submit a project that way. It's a lot faster. So, yes.
Perfect. A comment on, do you need examples? I think, yes, Jules, we would like prefer some examples of the EOB problem. I know that you mentioned that you have multiple at one facility, so that would be helpful, I think. I think you addressed Marilyn's question here as well. This comment is about, this person's been working with Ron Dean, and I'll say that I think Danielle is more of like your
home health,
whereas Ron Dean would be like your waiver services, if you're providing waiver. That was probably where you'd go to Ron Dean as part of the LTSS.
That's not necessarily true. Sometimes I would assume it's probably Genesis. The large hospital systems, we have one rep for all services. They have one contact person. So the intent is actually to make it easier. And Ron Dean can work with Danielle because, you know, Danielle's got the lion's share of all the issues, but the contact person would be Ron Dean if that's who they're used to using. And then unless you're affiliated with a major hospital system, most of the providers on this call, I would be the manager contact.
Okay.
Me
thanks
or Danielle.
Thanks for the clarification, Julie. I appreciate
yep.
that. So the comment based off of Danielle's response earlier is saying that that's available for home health and hospice, but they're less likely to get that info with their nursing facility provider reps. Is there any feedback on, is that the same, would that be the same path that they should use for their nursing facility reps as well?
I just think they need to have the conversation with their rep first, just to make sure. That is okay with the representative. I cannot speak for any other representative. Mm-hmm. So, you know, she just needs to talk to her nursing facility rep and just, you know what I mean, say, hey, you know what I mean, just pose a question. Hey, hospice claims, this is what my other representative does. Is there any way you think you can do this as well? You know, all you can do is ask.
Right. And I think Marilyn's next comment is, you know, sometimes they pay, so it's not a total non-payment of their claim, but some of them do, some of them don't.
Partial payment claims, I need to claim. I cannot have a report run when there's a partial payment because it's really not a denial. It's just paid incorrectly. So, unfortunately, for those claims, I need the claims.
Okay. No, that's good info to have. Okay, I don't have any more in my chat, and I don't think I have any more in my emails either at this point. So seeing nothing else, I want to thank John, Danielle, Julie for joining us on the call. I appreciate it. Appreciate your continued participation in the calls as we continue to work things out and figure out what's best for everyone. So hope everyone has a good rest of the week and stays warm.
Stay- Stay safe, stay healthy.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.